The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
Daniel Harris, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Fifth round of the FA Cup. This is obviously about as exciting a tie as you could possibly have because it pits David Moyes against Manchester United at a time when David Moyes looks like, for all the world, a very good, progressive, humble manager.
Yeah, I think the thing with David Moyes is a good manager. He did a great job at Everton. The thing that he wasn't the right manager for Manchester United, and he wasn't the right manager to take over from Alex Ferguson, but that not all managers are good at all jobs. I mean, most managers tend to fail somewhere, and it's about different jobs demand different skills, because finding players for Everton and judging the right players for Everton and playing in the style of Everton, and similar to West Ham, is really different from dealing right at the very top end, where the kind of personalities you have to deal with are different, the kind of football that's expected of you is also different. So because Moyes failing at United didn't make him not a good manager, and we're seeing at West Ham that he's done a fantastic job there.
What seems to happen is that go on.
Do managers peak, in your opinion, Daniel? Do they go through these ups and downs, like in terms of actually their capabilities and their abilities?
I'm not sure about that, because I think with most jobs that aren't physical, so obviously you naturally get rubbish at those the older you get, you're always learning. So I think we've seen that Jose Mourinho is probably an outlier in that aspect, because it feels with him that he's somehow been subsumed by the worst aspects of the character that made him a genius, and they've kind of defeated the good aspects. So it feels like he is kind of finished as a manager, but at least finished at the top end. And when I say that, I don't mean he's rubbish, but he's getting worse, not better. But anyone sensible learns from the mistakes that they made and learns from what they do, and is always thinking about the game differently and taking notice of the improvements that other people are making. And I think that there's no reason to think that David Moyes wouldn't have done that. So no, I don't see that he would necessarily have previously peaked, because you're always learning. And I mean, look at Roy Hodgson. I mean, he's still going, and I'm absolutely certain that he would think he's a better manager now than he was 20 years ago when he was only 78 years old.
I think the thing about Moyes is that he failed after he left Manchester United a couple of times. But it seems this time around he's actually used his time away from the game to go off and see what other clubs are doing, to go out and spend time at other clubs around Europe and to learn and to get the best of the statistical analysis that's happening in the data revolution, and to incorporate parts of that into his management, which I think we would have assumed, probably wrongly, was just old school, because he was anointed by Ferguson and Ferguson was of that old school. And that might have...
I think that all these people are always looking, they'll do anything to get an edge. So I think the idea that any of these guys would suddenly reject something that they could see other people were doing, and not only that, but the people who are succeeding are doing it, whether it's data or whether it's thinking about the game differently, you're dealing with extremely competitive and extremely hard individuals. So I think the thing with Moyes was that what happened at United hit him very hard. You can see it, because he was constantly complaining in interviews years after he left that, I mean, when his contract ought still to have been running, where he was complaining that they should have given him time and he needed more time. And the fact that he was still going on about it showed that it bothered him. But it feels, as you say, like he has got back to thinking about what he does well. So when you look at West Ham, they look like a David Moyes team. They're big, big men who defend well, but their intention, although they're kind of set up in a defensive way, the intention is to go forward. And I think that is the thing about Moyes, is that it's finding that balance. Now, that balance wasn't right for Manchester United, who were at the time were champions and had really good players, but they were also aging players. And it is worth noting that the team he was left by Alex Ferguson was a champion team, but it was a team that was over the hill. And there was something about it that it was almost like there's this old contraption and only the crackpot genius inventor knows how to get it to work. And Moyes wasn't that. But when you look at Everton, when you look at his Everton team, they were hard and they were solid, but they also had some flair. Like Stephen Pienaar was a lovely player, for example. And I think that's what he's done at West Ham. He Moyes respects flair. He doesn't necessarily know exactly how to generate it. And if he's faced with a choice, he's likely to choose a cautious option. But he understands that to have a good football team, you need players who can play. So he signed Benrahma. He's now signed Jesse Lingard. And he signed players who can play. And then he's also, what he was always good at was finding players. So he's done that with Thomas Suchek, who was a brilliant signing. And West Ham also really good at set pieces. And they're good at attacking set pieces and they're good at defending set pieces. And that kind of combination will always be difficult to resist because ultimately, much as people seem to think otherwise, football doesn't change. The rules of the game are the same. And the things that score goals are, there'll always be slightly new wrinkles, but a near post corner hit hard and flat is going to always be difficult to defend. And it doesn't matter who the team is, it will always be the case.
If David Moyes had been backed at Old Trafford, what do you think his starting 11 would have looked like in year two and how would it have evolved?
It's hard to know because you don't quite know who he was going to sign. I mean, he thought he was going to sign Gareth Bale. And I think the story goes that he thought the Bale deal was done. And I remember he gave an interview in his second game, United drew 0-0 at home to Chelsea. It was a terrible game. And he gave this really strangely smug interview afterwards that suggested something big was about to happen. And I think the story goes that he thought he was getting Bale until the television showed him otherwise and that Bale was going to Madrid. So the fact that he then went and panic bought Fellaini did not speak very well of what his plans were. But United did need a big overhaul, and whether he was ever going to get the money necessary to do that, I mean, he said no to Thiago and tried to get Fabregas, who ended up not coming. So he did have some idea of what was required. He also knew that United needed pace up front because Rooney and Van Persie didn't have that. I mean, Van Persie never exactly had it and Rooney was losing his pace. He did know that. But I felt like he made those two big decisions. Like one was Fellaini and the other one was Rooney, who obviously still had some quality because he was Wayne Rooney. But Fergie had done everything but pack up his house for him and find him a new club. And for whatever reason, Moyes decided that he knew better than the manager who'd managed Rooney for all those years. I mean, perhaps he thought that Rooney wasn't finished as a player, but that it was just a personal thing with Fergie. But Fergie almost fell out. I can't really think of anyone off the top of my head who Fergie fell out with until he was ready to fall out with him because they were no longer of use to him. But Moyes committed to Rooney, which cost him a lot of money of his budget, and also left him a bit of a hostage to fortune because once you keep Wayne Rooney, you have to keep picking him because if you do pick him, it's a story. But if you don't pick him, it's an even bigger story. And he was the captain and the leader of the team. And I think that decision to sign Fellaini and that decision to keep Rooney made it really hard for Moyes to come back. So that by the time he went into the market again and he went for Juan Mata, who was not the right player, but you could see why he thought that he was, things were already quite a long way gone and quite messy. And it was really hard to get it back because the players had obviously decided that they weren't having him. And the support had also decided that they weren't having him. And as you say, as I think it's an advert, you don't get a second chance to make a first impression. I think it was the old Lynx advert. I can get the whiff of a Lynx Marine in my nostrils as I say it. But it's really hard to come back when you start as badly as Moyes did, and he couldn't turn it around. But as I say, at the beginning, that doesn't mean he's not good at what he does, because he is. And West Ham is the perfect job for Moyes.
If he'd got Bale, what would have happened?
If what, sorry?
If the Bale signing had happened, would that have been
the
a transformative? Yeah.
Yeah, you're talking about something very different at that point because you're signing one of the best players in the world at the peak of his powers. So if that happens, I mean, you don't know what's going to happen, but yeah, you're adding 30 goals a season to your team and you're probably making other people want to play for your team more as well. I don't think that United suddenly win the league under Moyes because Ferdinand and Vidic were coming to the end, Evra was coming to the end, and there's nothing to suggest that Moyes has the ability to build a title-winning team. Doesn't mean he can't, but there's no evidence to say that he can. To build a title-winning team and to find players who are good enough to form that title-winning team. He's good at finding players who will get a mid-ranking team up to sort of the lower top rank. We know he can do that, but it's not clear that he knows what is required to win titles because he's never done that before. But then, I mean, Louis van Gaal has done that before and he couldn't do it either. Mm. And Jose Mourinho has done that several times before and he couldn't do it either. So we can't criticise what David Moyes did at United without also criticising the owners who weren't that interested in United being the best team because they wouldn't put the money in that was necessary to do that. And when you're losing some of the greatest players the English football has ever seen, usually it's going to cost a lot of money to replace that or it's going to take a lot of time. And neither of those things were forthcoming for Moyes.
One thing on the current season with David Moyes and the Jesse Lingard signing, as you mentioned a moment ago, is there a part of the Manchester United part of you that's just loving this, that is feeling warm and fuzzy seeing Jesse Lingard link up with David Moyes and seeing David Moyes being able to nurture Jesse Lingard and perhaps take him back to some level of form that he, I guess, did show at glimpses a couple of seasons ago for Manchester United?
I can only really answer that question as a United supporter, right? So I'm going to say I don't really associate David Moyes with Manchester United. He wasn't there for very long. The time that he was there went very badly. So I would love to see Jesse Lingard become the player that he is at his best and produce that consistently. But doing it with or without Moyes doesn't have very much emotional resonance for me because Moyes doesn't have very much emotional resonance for me. But Jesse Lingard has an absolute stack of emotional resonance for me because I saw him score the winning goal in the FA Cup final in extra time when United had 10 men. It was a brilliant goal. And I guess if it was the only time I feel I've ever cried at a football match. Because, I mean, ultimately, I guess whenever we cry, we're thinking about ourselves. And it's also probably fair to add that a drink had been taken. But what happened was that Saturday morning, I'd been to synagogue with my wife and my daughter. Well, I'd been first and they'd come afterwards. And they were racially profiled on the way in and prevented from entering. So a few hours later, after the aforementioned drink had or had not been taken, hard to say, to see, I guess, someone biracial score an unbelievable winning goal for United with 10 men was more than I could handle at that moment. So I do have a lot of emotional... Jesse Lingard does resonate for me emotionally. And it's also because he grew up playing for United. He achieved his dreams of playing for United. And as football supporters, I think we can all appreciate how moving that is when we see young players who've been at the club a long time make their name at that club. And then when they have a moment, and some of the other moments too that Jesse Lingard had, then we feel that deeply in our soul because our football clubs are reflections not just of football but of who we are, because often they're passed down to us through the generations. So by following them, we're not just doing things that we do, we're doing what our parents did, what our grandparents did, and the stories of those clubs and of the things that they've seen are passed down to us like family history. So we feel all of those deep in our soul, and they're expressions of family, of heritage and of identity. And for me personally, Jesse Lingard is absolutely part of that.
And he played for England in the World Cup semi-final. So his career, when he sits back and starts doing the after-dinner circuit, he'll have some good stories about big games and having made it as well. I want to just ask you about this because Phil has pointed out it's 7 years to the day since Manchester United drew 2-2 against Fulham. It's under David Moyes. This was the game of crosses, a record 81 crosses against Fulham, who at the time were bottom of the table. Fulham scored an injury-time equaliser. Do you remember that game? Have you done a full pod on that yet?
Who could forget that game? The game of the crosses. Who could forget that game? Yeah, I absolutely do remember that game. And I mean, it was one of many under Moyes that were just... I mean, I think people's hope had gone by this point. He lasted a few more months, but it felt like it was over at that point. And that is one of the things, actually, with all the post-Fergie managers... They all kept their jobs for longer than they should have done. Probably, possibly because of contractual terms that meant they got less of a payoff if they got fired after Champions League hadn't have been achieved. But it was the same with Van Gaal. I remember there was a dreadful game away to Stoke in December around Christmas of Van Gaal's second season. And United lost, I think they lost 2-0. It might have been 2-1, but they were absolutely walloped by Stoke. And at that point, you knew it was over. but he's stuck it out until the end of May, until after the cup final. And similarly with Mourinho, in the summer, before Mourinho's last season, or last half season, Edward had refused him Harry Maguire, then briefed to the press that he didn't think Harry Maguire was good enough and that kind of thing. And I mean, he might have been right about that. But if you're publicly challenging the footballing judgment of your manager as someone who could not know less about football and have no less expertise in football relative to Jose Mourinho, who's one of the greats of the game, it is time to part ways with that manager or leave your own job. And again, that didn't happen. And Mourinho stayed for another few months until things got even worse. And it was at that point that he got fired. So, yeah, I absolutely do remember that 2-2 against Fulham. I don't think anyone will forget that 2-2 against Fulham. And it's fair to say I think that United now are better than they have been at any time since Fergie by a long way. But they still have some distance yet to travel.
Yeah, and so Tommy, who is our producer, who you know, is a Manchester United fan. He's got the words bottling it beside the 3-3 draw that he wants me to ask. I don't think they're bottling these games because they're not good enough to bottle it just yet. If they were miles ahead of everybody else and just as good as Man City and they were drawing 3-3 with Everton in matches, then you would say they're bottling it. But to bottle it, you have to be really, really good in the first place.
Sort of. I think that Jamie Carragher did some good analysis on Everton's equaliser on last night, where he pointed out that he was saying when he was defending a free kick, he would always get really nervous when it was like a late free kick. And rather than have the line as high as the line should be, he would be more inclined to drop and just make sure that it was him that headed the ball away. And that was what he thought Harry Maguire was doing, because it was him who played everyone on side. And the problem was that the line was too high and Harry Maguire was thinking, well, he's the captain of the team, so he's going to try and head that ball away. So there was an element of nervousness, but I also agree with what Tommy's saying, that all of the things that you would criticise this United team for, or all the things that you would say might go wrong, or even the things that look a bit unfortunate, they all add up to not being quite good enough at the end. I think that it is worth noting that the way that fixtures have fallen in City's favour. Obviously, they won at Liverpool at the weekend, and that was a great performance. But the 9 games that they won prior to that, 7 of them were against teams who were in the bottom 9. One was against Frank Lampard's Chelsea, just as they're in the process of getting the manager sacked and falling apart. And the other one was against Villa, where they had that ridiculous luck from the refereeing decision. So I think that you do want to note that, but ultimately, City are the best team in the league. They're the best team in the league by a distance. And now they have this run of really difficult games. They've got no more gimmies left. Even if they start slipping, I don't think that anyone would expect United to put a run together that's good enough to punish them for that, because ultimately they're not good enough. The defence in particular isn't good enough. But the way they're attacking these days is really encouraging. And they've played much worse than they played against Everton this season and won games. But the way they were putting their attacks together, the way they were sustaining their attacks, the way they were threatening, is making them look like what is a good team now. And they now need to make that jump from being a good team to being a really good team. And that's going to require some incremental and some internal improvements, what Wenger used to call internal solutions, but it's probably going to require another player or two as well.
Is finishing above Liverpool in the Premier League table this season satisfaction enough for Manchester United?
No, of course not. Finishing above, you want to finish above all the teams. Finishing above Liverpool would show improvement, but we do also need to note that much as people seem desperate to invent excuses for why Liverpool are where they are, the main reason is still the injuries. And you could say that Jurgen Klopp made a mistake in not predicting that these injuries might happen, given the fixture list and just given his lack of strength, depth and centre-back. You could also criticise the board for not giving him the money or as much money as he needed, if that's what happened, or order the technical team for not insisting that he sign at least one more centre-back at the beginning of the season. But the main reason still for why Liverpool are where they are is the injuries, though there are other important reasons like the mental, physical stress of succeeding for so long, of playing the way that Klopp likes them to play, teams finding them out, all of those things. But Yeah, so finishing above Liverpool is an improvement. If United can finish second, that would be an improvement. If they can finish closer to the top than they did last season, that would also be an improvement. But it will never be satisfactory, because satisfactory is winning the league. And even then, you're always still looking for an edge. Like, that's the best teams, the best players, the best managers, the best at anything in any sport, any field of human endeavour, always looking at how they can improve, and never quite satisfied. I remember Ryan Giggs saying that he always hated the unsuccessful summers, the summers that followed unsuccessful seasons, much more than he enjoyed the summers that followed successful seasons. And it's that kind of attitude that drives winners on to become repeat winners. And what United need to do is they do need to find that mentality, because we have seen games recently where they haven't pressed enough to win. I mean, that point at Anfield suddenly doesn't look like a great point when you see Burnley win there. I mean, everyone's winning there. You see City going there and absolutely taking them apart. And United aren't good enough necessarily to take Liverpool apart, but they were good enough on that day to take it to Liverpool more than they did. And I think given the team that United are, that is necessary, because they're not ruthless in front of goal yet. And so when in a game where you only create two or three good chances, United aren't a team who you think are good enough to rely on scoring one of two or three chances. And they drew 0-0 at home to Chelsea, they drew 0-0 away to Arsenal, and they drew 0-0 at home to Man City. And the attitude which they approach those games is not the attitude which champions generally approach games. And after they beat Liverpool in the Cup, I felt like that was a sea change, because it was the first time that they'd gone up against a good team and just looked to impose their game.
Yeah.
They hadn't worried too much about what might happen to them and looked at what they were going to do. Well, and that looked like a sea change, and I was pleased to see that. And Ole even referred to it after the game. But then they went to Arsenal and they played again themselves.
Yeah.
They played a midfield of Fred and McTominay, and they ended up with another 0-0, and it was costly.
Well, look, we'll see what happens tonight. Daniel, good stuff. Thanks a million.
No worries, guys. See you again, lads. Have a good day, everyone.
Daniel Harris giving us some thoughts there. That game in the FA Cup tonight, we'll talk about it on tomorrow's show as well.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.